Arizona's news station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
For me, I think it's one of the most frustrating things out there is the understanding the opioid issue, understanding how indiscriminate opioid addiction and what it leads to is, and realizing how it's just not a big conversation starter, how so many other things that, again, statistically you're probably not in danger of, tend to dominate, while the opioid epidemic is real and it's affecting people all over the valley. But we actually have some positive news, at least when it comes to Arizona.
Yeah, you don't hear positive news all that often.
You always hear the worst case.
To the opioid epidemic. But that positive news is coming from Dr. Kara Crist, who is the director of the Arizona Department of Health Services.
Oh, okay.
She says that we are seeing some improvements here locally when it comes to battling the opioid epidemic. And here's why.
Some of the things that we've seen are a decrease in the number of opioid prescriptions. Since our public health emergency has been called, we've seen an increase in the number of patients being referred to behavioral health services after they have survived an overdose. We've seen an increase in the number of providers who are looking up patients in the Controlled Substances Prescription Monitoring Program before prescribing their opioids. And we're seeing increases in naloxone being dispensed to community members through our pharmacies.
So we're doing a lot of good things there. The prescriptions down, patients being referred for behavioral health after an overdose up, physicians looking at patients to see if they have these kinds of medications up, the number of prescriptions for naloxone or the use of that up. Those are really great things that we're seeing here in Arizona, which it's going to take some time to have those benefits play itself out, Bruce, within the community to really see the improvement in the death numbers when it comes to opioid overdoses.
This is kind of the leading indicator and the lagging indicator.
But that is a good leading indicator. Right. And heck, anytime we can talk about something positive in our own community, especially when it comes to the opioid epidemic, I'll take that gold star.
Yeah, especially when, and maybe it's because I know people. And maybe it's because I've been around those that have struggled with this, that I know how serious it can be. We also know, and this is not anecdotal, that the opioid crisis at the root of it, is, I'll make the statement so you don't have to, is drug companies over-enthusiastically selling the product as a non-addictive painkiller to doctors, and doctors prescribing it maybe innocently at first, and then maybe not so innocently later.
Yeah, and that's where you're starting to get these lawsuits that the manufacturer of the drugs themselves may have lied about the likelihood of addiction. But doctors in particular are also critical when it comes to combating the opioid epidemic. As you heard there, prescriptions are down in Arizona. I want to say they are down some 36% this year. That's a good thing.
Positive.
But there is a doctor. There's a doctor right now in Massachusetts who is being charged with involuntary manslaughter because one of his patients died from an opioid overdose.
I haven't really heard of this before. And obviously, you've got to reach a pretty high bar. And here's what this doctor did to get charged with involuntary manslaughter. He had a patient, a female patient, who actually overdosed on opioids prescribed by that doctor and survived the overdose. Okay? Dr. Myron continued to prescribe what at least the Massachusetts Attorney General says is large doses of opioids to a person who had previously overdosed until she overdosed and died later.
Yeah.
That is negligence, isn't it?
That's a drug dealer.
How else would you describe that?
She needed to get her fix.
You have a patient who is overdosed, and your response to their overdose is to continue to fill scripts for the drug they overdosed on?
Now, MassHealth is one of these, what do you want to call it, like insurance companies?
Yeah, okay.
And they say that this doctor ranked as the largest provider of high-dose, short-acting oxycodone prescriptions among all their providers in the state.
Wow. He's a pill pusher.
He is going to be, or is, charged with involuntary manslaughter. Now, I think it's unusual here. Obviously, this doctor is a pill pusher. I think he's also a drug dealer. He just has a stethoscope around his neck.
And a white coat.
But what... Yeah. Is this a bridge too far?
Charging doctors with involuntary manslaughter if their patients die due to prescriptions they write.
I get why the case is being built against him in Massachusetts, and I really think that the attorney general's office there has a good case.
Yeah.
That being said, my concern, Bruce, is for the doctors that listen to us right now, the good doctors, because
sure,
they far outweigh the bad.
This doctor,
I think, falls into the bad category.
Okay.
But those listening to us, the vast majority of them, good category.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to start changing the way they prescribe based upon a concern as to whether or not they're going to be charged should something negative happen to one of their patients?
Become gun shy.
Yeah.
In maybe prescribing needed, reasonable medication for someone because they're afraid of where it might lead to. I guess I would say you have to trust the good doctors on some level.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
And my impression is the more and more doctors I speak to, they're already gun shy about opioids. The evidence that's coming out and the how quickly you can become dependent or addicted to it, the horror stories, I think they hear and see the same things, if not much more, than the average citizen does in the doctor world. And I think they're already kind of cautious because of this, which makes you believe, like, if there is a doctor like this doctor out there, he's certainly not going to be able to argue he didn't know that this was a potential outcome, right? I mean, what world are you living in as a medical professional that you didn't know that opioid addiction and abuse was an issue?
Oh, he knew. He knew, especially since this particular patient...
Yeah.
Had already overdosed on a script that he provided to
right.
her, and yet continued.
Yet continued to do it. But progress being made here in Arizona, some changing of some rules. It's going to affect some patients, and some people might be dealing with a little extra pain because of it. I just wonder what's the price you put on the lives saved. I'm okay with that. It appears that congressmen are a lot like your grandparents. Oh, not just because they're all 70 with gray hair, but they have absolutely no idea how technology works. Many of you, as you get ready to head out for the holidays, are going to be reconnecting grandma to the Wi-Fi and downloading the latest Apple update on their phone because they have no idea how it works. Well, we'll give you the latest on how Congress doesn't know how it works.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
There's a lot going on today. Woo. Staying on top of it. Yesterday, though... The Google machine people were dragged into...
You just sound old when you say the Google machine.
Well, I'm getting ready to because I think that's about what the congressmen in the U.S. Congress call it, as the CEO of Google was brought into the House Judiciary Committee to testify about a variety of conspiracy theories that congressmen believe in, and also, maybe most hilariously, if that's a word... show how little they understand tech in this day and age.
We saw this with Mark Zuckerberg. Remember when he got called in front of Congress for Facebook?
Yes, and it had to do with like privacy issues, and they were asking him questions.
And they just showed how little they knew about Facebook.
Can we paraphrase and do one of them? It was a senator, I want to say, looked at him and said, well, if you don't charge people for the Facebook, how do you make money? And Mark Zuckerberg looked back at him and said,
we sell ads. Okay.
So we even had to explain that to them.
Yeah.
How do you make money? So we have the Google guy in there.
The Google guy. Okay,
the Google guy
is sitting there.
Yes.
In front of the House Judiciary Committee.
Yes.
And
they've got some questions, Pamela,
he's
about how the Google works.
He's one of the most powerful people in the world.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's before them. So they wanted to ask him some questions. Let's kick things off with Representative Steve King asking about an iPhone ad.
Okay.
I have a 7-year-old granddaughter who picked up her phone before the election, and she's playing a little game, kind of game a kid would play, and up on there pops a picture of her grandfather.
Okay.
And I'm not going to say into the record what kind of language was used around that picture of her grandfather, but I'd ask you, how does that show up on a 7-year-old's iPhone who's playing a kid's game?
Congressman, iPhone is made by a different company, and so, you know, I mean...
It might have been an Android. It was a hand-me-down of some kind.
I'm happy to follow up and understand the specifics.
You realize that Google doesn't make game apps that your 7-year-old granddaughter can download onto her iPhone. It's a bleeping search engine and data gathering company. And Representative King wants to know why an app had an ad that disparaged him on his granddaughter's iPhone, so he asked the guy from Google.
You
don't understand how it works, do you, sir?
No, no. You want another example of... You just don't understand this.
Yeah.
If you Google the word idiot under images, a picture of Donald Trump comes up. Yeah. I just did that.
Okay.
How would that happen? How does search work so that that would occur?
We take the keyword and match it against web pages and rank them based on over 200 signals. Things like relevance, freshness, popularity, how other people are using it.
In other words, explaining to him how a search algorithm works, that when you search for a word, a keyword, or a phrase, a search engine, not just Google, by the way, any search engine, scours the internet for things that pop up. So if people have posted images or articles that link Donald Trump and the word idiot together, they come up in the search. Obviously, this congresswoman thinks it's nefarious activity that idiot and Donald Trump are connected when you Google it, not understanding how algorithms work.
Right. And Google has taken a really hands-off approach to those algorithms. They link the word to the picture, and a lot of it has been manipulated. That whole idiot President Trump started on Reddit. And there were people that were linking all of his pictures to the word idiot, similar to what they did back in 2009 with searches for Michelle Obama.
Mm-hmm.
You started to see a picture of the first lady's face retouched as having like ape-like features.
Yeah.
And Google then would place ads up, you know, trying to raise awareness about, you know, race and things along those lines. But they didn't take it down. They've really taken a hands-off approach to this over the years. Okay, but
it's a computer algorithm.
Yeah, there are a lot of different ways. Yes, exactly. And they gather all the associations and everything that is tied to a word and to an individual.
What else do our grandparents serving in Congress not understand about technology?
Have you considered having an online school that people could go to with a Google rep and you could kind of log in and kind of ask questions or have Google... And not like Comcast where you get put on hold for 30 minutes and then find somebody who you can't understand.
What?
Something easy to talk to somebody and say, how do I do this or that?
How do I Google?
Congressman, we are constantly looking for better ways to do it. One of the areas is giving online tutorials, and we haven't specifically looked at an option like that.
Wait.
I'm happy to take that feedback.
Wait. You need a tutorial
on how to work Google.
How to Google?
How to Google things. Is there a school I can go to that's not like Comcast, which we wouldn't know around here, but they're the worst customer service kind of thing you can think of, that's not like them, so I can understand how to use the Google?
Is there anybody listening to us right now that is unclear how to
Google
use
school.
Google?
Congressmen need Google school.
Here, let me Google that for you.
Oh, my God.
What we don't know are who are these 1,000 people, and we don't know what their social media looks like. But we do know that the people that come from that county are about 80% supporters of Hillary Clinton. And so that would be a built-in bias if I know people from California and know their politics from California, and I think I do.
Congressman, it's an important question, but the way we rank our results is essentially based on user feedback, and that's what drives the iterative loop in our, in what we put in.
Yeah, that's Steve King again, making the argument that Google employees are Hillary lovers, and that's why searches show up bad things about Donald Trump. Again, not understanding how an algorithm works and that it's not Google employees. Well, he wasn't the only one. Representative Lamar Smith believes, you know what? Those employees, there's somebody. Every time you Google search something, there's an employee answering back.
What does methodology have to do with the fact that 96% of the references to Trump are from liberal media?
There are always studies, you know, which can show one set of data and arrive at conclusions. But we have looked at results on our top news category. We find that we have a wide variety of sources, including sources from the left and sources from the right. And we are committed to making sure there's diverse perspectives.
Again, it's driven by popularity. Do you know what I'm saying? Hopefully you understand how Google works. If it has ad or next to it, those are the ones that are being pushed to the top. But the rest of them, they're paid for. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And again, that's how Google makes money.
Maybe we do need Google school, because I don't know how many people actually know
sometimes
that.
Sometimes you have to go to the second page of a Google search to
but
find the stuff.
But who does that?
Nobody does. Nobody. They know that.
That's why you have search engine optimization, where you get different words in there, and it bumps you up to the top of the list for like the searches. But there is a game.
But Lamar Smith believes, and he asked at one point, has Google ever sanctioned an employee for manipulating the search algorithm? And the CEO had to say, well, it's not possible for a person to do that, to manipulate search results, to which Representative Smith says, I disagree. Okay. Says the guy that probably still can't figure out how to connect his iPhone to the Capitol Wi-Fi. What do you want to bet? Why the hell is it all? I can't. Where are my grandkids? How do you download? Chief, Phoenix Police Chief Jerry Williams is going to join us next. We're going to get her on the record, get a chance to talk to her about the increase in officer-involved shootings and the New York Times article that just came out where she believes she was mischaracterized. We'll give her a chance to clear that up. That's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Joining us right now on our KTR Newsmaker line is Phoenix Police Chief Jerry Williams. Chief Williams, good morning.
So, hi, Bruce and Pamela. Thanks very much for giving me a chance to talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we sincerely appreciate it. Obviously, you and all of us are reacting to a story in there which categorizes your response to a rise in police officer shootings, and I think it's fair to say that you don't agree with that categorization. But I do have a question, right? I want to start with this. Councilman DeCiccio is also quoted in this article about 41 officer-involved shootings in Phoenix, the most of any city in the United States. He says Phoenix is a more violent city than any others. Do you agree that Phoenix is, I'll use the term, uniquely violent?
So I don't agree with that statement at all. We're not uniquely violent. What I know for a fact in looking at the factual information is that 41 times this year, Phoenix police officers have had to deploy their firearms when engaging with individuals in our public who have been violent towards our officers, and some of them violent towards community members. So a gross characterization of the violence in the city of Phoenix, I don't agree with that statement, but I do know that we've seen an increase and the violence toward law enforcement with some people who make the decision to engage us that way.
You know, Chief, you've been in law enforcement for quite some time. You talk to your officers every single day, not just, you know, officers here in Phoenix, but I know that you have contact with law enforcement all across the country. What do you think is going on right now?
So Pamela, I so appreciate that question, because that is the exact reason why in May of this year, when we saw the fact that we were trending with the same number of officer-involved shootings as we had last year, that we had to make a conscious choice to be proactive and bring in an external entity who has national platform experience, as well as work with our academic folks to come and look at the why. I don't know why, which is why we have this study and commission, the National Foundation study.
Real quick, when do you expect to have that study?
Yet another great question. So when we went to council to ask for the study, they were given, the National Police Foundation was given a six-month window to complete the study. So keeping that in mind, we anticipated it to be completed by February, but they haven't just been sitting around doing nothing. So they've gathered data. They've gathered crime data. They've watched our training. They've looked at our policies, procedures, and practices. They've connected with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. They've met with labor. They've met with community members. So they're doing their due diligence. So I expect an end product in February.
Okay, Chief Jerry Williams, Phoenix Police Department, when you get that report, will you come back on the air and explain the findings to us?
Oh, absolutely. We will share it with the public. We will share it internally. I am just truly hopeful that we will get to some of the reasons why and get to if there's anything we can do differently in training, if it's anything we can do differently as community members. We do want to learn from each of these experiences. And if I could, I don't know how much time I have on air. So we haven't just been sitting by waiting and letting 41 happen. We've made some adjustments in our training to include some of the very scenarios that our officers are facing in these critical incidents that they've been in. We've increased our crisis intervention team training. We've been training, and working with our community in active shooter situations. So we just haven't been sitting by doing nothing.
Yeah. Again, we're talking to Phoenix Police Chief Jerry Williams, and the training issue has come up. You've certainly recommended it. You're talking about it. Can you help me understand a little bit more about what that training looks like for officers? Is it, I've heard terms like de-escalation, things like this, where they don't get to the point of having to fire their weapon?
So we constantly teach and train de-escalation practices. We're actually bringing squads into the training bureau to run them through tactical scenarios and situations where they will have to make the decisions on when to use force and what type of force to use. That training also involves mental health training for our officers. 2 years ago, when I first got here, we made sure to add an extra block of instruction of mental health training for our new recruits as they come out of the academy, therefore putting on an extra week of training for them. And then last but not least, because we haven't mentioned this on air, our body-worn cameras. So we've not just been sitting around doing nothing, waiting for body-worn cameras to fall from the sky. We've actually been working through a procurement process, and I'm hopeful to go before mayor and council in January to have the opportunity to fully complement the patrol function with body-worn cameras.
Chief Williams, with the training that your officers have received in the wake of these numbers, 41 officer-involved shootings this year, in the city of Phoenix, a record for our community here. When do those trainings take place, and have you seen a drop in the number of officer-involved shootings post-training?
Pamela, that's actually a really good question. So we were trending really high and really fast at the beginning of the year, and then we made some adjustments to training, and it appears to be trending down. But keep this in mind. The employees or my officers, when they go on scene, they are reacting to the threats posed to them. So while I can train my officers all day, I can't necessarily gauge the reactions that the individuals who are becoming violent towards officers, violent towards our community members. So, to say that we've seen officer-involved shootings go down because of the training, I'm not certain of that. One more piece I do want to share with the public is that we launched, and I think it was last month, our officer-involved shooting dashboard that community members can log onto, can look at the information of our officer-involved shootings. And so we're being very accountable and very transparent. Huh. So that's on phoenixopendata.com.
Okay. Another good thing. Again, we're talking to Phoenix Police Chief Jerry Williams, and we sincerely appreciate your time today as we talk about the report, the numbers out there. 41
yes.
officer-involved shootings in the city of Phoenix, about double last year and more than any other. And as the police chief, obviously this falls right on your desk, and you're just as concerned about it as we are. One of the things I noticed in the report, in the reporting, is of the 41 officer-involved shootings, there was a gun present, a firearm present, either real or replica, if I'm being clear on this, in 35 of those. Am I to understand
yes.
that in all 35, did the suspect brandish or threaten the officer with a weapon, or was it merely a weapon was present?
So great question, Bruce, because just carrying a firearm in the city of Phoenix and the city of Arizona is not a crime. It's when that individual makes a conscious choice and decision to brandish, to point the weapon at, to fire at, to engage law enforcement. It's our responsibility to then stop that threat. So it's not just walking around carrying a gun. It is pointing the gun at the officers. It's shooting at the officers, and or it's pointing at, shooting at, or killing other individuals prior to our arrival.
Yeah, and you can understand where I was coming from with that. Is in the state of Arizona, we had some statistics how there's more gun ownership. We know that it's legal to carry concealed. And does that present some unique challenges, maybe different from these other cities that are mentioned, where officers are running into more and more people who are armed?
So, again, I don't want to get into the gun carrying issue.
No, I mean, it's not a negative.
I actually want to wait to see what the foundation study in Arizona State University comes up with. I will say this is an anomaly year for certain. But again, I don't want the public to think that the Phoenix Police Department thinks that it's the community's fault. There are individuals in the community who are making decisions that are forcing our officers to have to engage. And I think at the end of the day, it's important to note and to say, too, that no police officer wants to get involved in an officer-involved shooting. So we're being called to the scene. We're being called when violent acts are happening. These subjects are stealing guns at gunpoint. As soon as officers arrive, they're firing at officers. Well, we had a couple who had killed people prior to our arrival. So we are engaging people who are very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Chief Jerry Williams of the Phoenix Police Department, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about this New York Times article, talking to us about the number of officer-involved shootings here in Phoenix. And we look forward to having you back on the program once that report that you commissioned comes out early next year.
Thanks, Pamela Bruce. Can I close with one more topic,
sure,
though?
Sure, feel free.
So that headline alone is a gross misrepresentation of what we've repeatedly said over time. We have worked with our community. We're still working out with our community. We'll continue to work with our community. We've been asking the community to give us folks who want to be police officers and work for the police department. We are part of the community. We will continue to work, and it will not change because that's been our focus and our commitment.
Well, we appreciate that. And thank you very much for the work that you're doing there. That is Phoenix Police Chief Jerry Williams responding to and clearly responding to the fact that she specifically does not believe it is uniquely the public's fault in all of these, the public in general, that we are uniquely violent in Phoenix.
There's a problem.
Agreed.
And why we have this problem in Phoenix, nobody knows quite yet. That report is going to be critical when it comes to determining what the next steps are.
No later than February, roughly, we hear?
Are the people of Phoenix attacking officers at a higher rate? Are the officers feeling a bit threatened more than they should? Is it just an anomaly in Phoenix turn in the barrel? We don't know. And anybody who tells you otherwise is speculating as well.
Here.
So I appreciate her coming on. I appreciate her answering the questions. And I look forward to taking a look at that report when it comes out.
Yeah.
As is everybody.
Holiday stress, festive stress. Is it ruining Christmas and the holidays for everyone? We'll talk about that next.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus.
Right, we are sneaking up on Christmas, by the way. We are closer. As a matter of fact, Pamela, we're within 2 weeks.
Oh, jeez.
I'm no math whiz, but I think we're 13 days away.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't.
Okay, do you realize that I'm now having like heart palpitations?
Really? That we're within 2 weeks from Christmas.
Do you know the amount of stuff I still have to do?
See? Well,
it
you're not alone.
It is ridiculous, my friend.
You know what? They call it festive stress.
Festive stress. Yeah, yes. Festive is for the rest of us. Festive stress. Yes. I know I'm not alone.
No.
Nope.
About a third of you out there suffer from some form of festive stress.
And I wonder what's the percent of that third, mm-hmm. of that 33%. What percentage of that is women?
Oh, you think women are more uniquely stressed? Because
totally.
us guys are like 13 days to Christmas. That means I've got at least 12 days before I need to start shopping.
My husband is such a help with so many things in my life.
Good
but when
him.
It comes to Christmas.
Chris. Oh, boy. Here comes He's like, good luck. Let me know how it turns out.
You know, and to his credit, he's like, let me know what I can help you out with. But sometimes it's just easier for me to do it kind of thing.
Ouch.
But, yeah, festive stress is real, ladies and gentlemen. You are not imagining things.
Yeah, yeah, good news. Probably not going to get any better in the next 13 days.
Oh, jeez, quit saying that.
Can January get here soon enough for me? Right? So, we're still trying to figure this out. Why would somebody harass, vandalize, terrorize autonomous vehicles, driverless cars? It's happening here in the Valley. Documented cases of people going out of their way. They hate driverless cars. Who are you people? I'm talking about it next on Arizona's News Station.